going to introduce my guest for today. His name is Daryl McMahon, and he runs a small consulting company called, here we go, I told you I was going to screw it up. Econogics. Is that it?
That's it.
Econogics. www.econogics.com. And that's a small consulting company that helps North American businesses improve their bottom line using practices and technologies which are environmentally beneficial. Daryl, thank you for joining me in the studio today. We're going to talk about energy, hydrogen myth, all sorts of stuff. But let's talk about first reducing. Well, we don't want to spend too much long. We're going to spend the last half hour certainly talking about electric vehicles and the hydrogen economy as it stands now, and this miracle fuel called hydrogen that's going to save our lives. But you cover all sorts of topics, including reducing your energy bills. We're going to talk about electric vehicles, of course, and saving on gasoline, gas outs, which bug me to death. Getting burned by your natural gas bill, solar, maybe some wind power. We'll talk about all those things. So let's just start off by quickly, if people don't get it yet, what are some of the things we can do to kind of maybe reduce our energy bills? Because as I told you, I brought in my bill, and of course we get the propaganda telling us to, you know, use fans instead of air conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense?
It makes sense.
Okay. Turning up our air conditioning thermostat?
It helps.
People like it too cool sometimes, don't you think?
A lot of people actually like the shock value of coming in from outdoors and feeling that wall of cold air, and then it's like, I know my air conditioning is working. However, you know, that's what gives us our summer colds and some other health problems. So those adjustments aren't particularly good for us. What we want to do is generally is keep it at a comfortable temperature for whatever it is your level of activity is indoors. If you're in the summer, most people, their activity is outdoors. When they're indoors, they're generally not that active. So we generally can afford to have our temperatures a bit higher indoors. Humidity is a factor for most of us, and sometimes a dehumidifier is much more effective than an air conditioner in terms of the comfort level for the energy you're expending.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, you'll always get that shock if you have any air conditioning on and it's very, very humid outside.
Right.
So that'll happen anyway. Of course, we've all heard to caulk and weather strip our doors and windows.
We've all heard it and we still don't do it.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Really.
Oh, well, I've used several. I buy this stuff in 3, 6, 12 packs. And I learned something interesting, that there is a difference between caulk and silicone.
Oh, absolutely.
I didn't know that. Because I've been using silicone, and you know what? It doesn't live up to its guarantee, you know, lasting 25 years.
No, generally, if it's outdoors, it's not going to stand up.
Yeah, but caulk does.
As a rule.
Huh. Interesting. I'm trying to find caulk now from now on, because, you know, I've been using silicone, and it fails after, I don't know, 7 years outside.
Right.
The southern exposure, lots of sun. Going along with windows, because I have those crappy Pearson windows that were put in the 70s, everybody was conned, especially older farmhouses that had beautiful windows. Yeah, they weren't energy efficient, but they were probably more energy efficient than these sliders or Pearson windows.
Could be. They were generally high maintenance, though. So the big issue for most people was that, you know, the old style windows in the farmhouses were typically the small panes of glass with lots of bits of wood in between, and then you had the window mastic that you had to you had to maintain a lot of glazing points. So it was a fairly labor intensive thing to maintain, and I think that's the big thing that most people went for.
Yeah.
But yes, the Pearson sliders are notoriously inefficient in terms of keeping heat in or out or whatever you're trying to accomplish.
But the good thing that you can do is apply that plastic film.
Works wonders.
It does.
And you can do it inside and outside. There's you can get the one that you put on the inside, use the hairdryer to bring it, but you can also get essentially a very clear version of the plastic vapor barrier plastic, and you can put that up on the outside.
Oh, I've never seen that.
And if you put that up around the window frame and basically use furring strips, then it'll be reusable from season to season. And basically it stops all that draft around the edges of the Pearson windows because you're sealing up the window frame.
Good point. I think I might try it on a few of my outdoor windows, too. It works on the indoors. Boy, it really it works. That's all I can say. There was one room in particular in my house that now you could probably heat it by one candle if you left a candle on. Right. Of course, set your pool heater thermostat back by 1 degree. I think anybody that has a pool heater is just a bit crazy. I have a pool. I mean, mm-hmm. sorry, but I have one, but I don't use a heater. My solar blanket, which is basically bubble plastic, mm-hmm. is my heater.
And they're phenomenally effective. And then the next level is people are using solar heating panels to extend the season
yeah.
for their pools
and
as well.
And I saw something else. They have this plastic mat that you put the water in, and it flows through small little tubes and comes out the other end. It's like a manifold, a right. radiator in a sense. Kind of interesting. Use a clothesline to dry your clothes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my girlfriend's on my case. I took down a clothesline because it impeded my visuals. But she'd use one if I put one up, so I'm gonna be tackling that one. A note to follow on clothes dryers: we would all be further ahead if we just halved the heat as well, like a longer spin time but less heat, meaning delicate cycle. Instead of putting out 3,000 watts, we're putting out 1,500 watts for more time. Does that work out?
So there's no real net benefit.
No?
You're still going to use the same number of kilowatt hours.
Oh, I thought I was...
Half the power for twice the time is still the same amount of energy.
Yeah. I thought I had something going there. It's like, put it on delicate, but have the motor spin longer. Okay.
But one thing that people are doing is they're moving to these, what I call European-style washing machines, the horizontal axis machines. They spin faster during the dry cycle, or the spin-dry cycle, and the result is there's much less moisture in the clothes by the time they're ready to go under the clothesline or into the clothes dryer. And you can also dry clothes indoors or drying racks. And, and
less water with the horizontal units as well.
And less water used, less detergent used,
yeah.
less energy used.
They're all the rage.
They are.
It's like going back 20, 30 years. Mm-hmm. I think they used to have them. And
they
then
did,
they
and
disappeared.
They were outrageously expensive, but they're becoming more affordable. Some of the North American manufacturers are coming on board, and we're starting to see domestically produced units.
Good. Run your dishwasher only when it's full. Well, I hope people are doing that. I don't have a dishwasher. I'm the dishwasher, and I let my dishes stack up. Yeah, it's disgusting, but, I mean, I don't have a dishwasher to hide them.
Mm-hmm.
I think dishwashers are probably more effective if you run them when they're full. Is this true? No, it can't be. Than hand washing them?
They can be. It depends on your hand washing technique.
I know.
There are people who apparently still like to have the water running continuously for rinsing the dishes when they're washing by hand.
Oh.
And if they're doing that, then it's going to be a net loser. Yeah. One of my preferred techniques is I like to save up dishes. My wife doesn't like this, but leave them in a dish tub with some water so that they're soaking the whole time that they're waiting, so that any material that's on them is getting loosened up. They're much easier to wash by hand when you're done. And then it's, zip right through the sink. You're done. Let them air dry, and as long as you have enough rack space.
Well, and that's what I do. I have a different technique. Your wife might like me for my technique, because I let the dishes pile in the corner, and yeah, they're crusty, but I fill up one sink only of hot water, half full. And I put those dishes in as many as possible, and then I walk away.
Yeah.
And then they soak in there. And the water is so hot that I can't put my hand in, but it cleans everything off. And then I come back a half an hour, and then I can work on it.
Yeah.
And no, if I rinse, and I rinse pretty much only drinking glasses usually, it's cold water, and it's only on. Or what I do is I wash all my glasses first and leave them, and then I only do the transfer rinse at one cycle. I think I'm more efficient than a dishwasher, I think. Wash laundry in cold water. We can do that now, eh?
Absolutely.
Technology and laundry detergents.
Been doing it for years.
Yeah. To me, though, will it really work on a greasy stain? Because I still have the notion that if you're not using hot water, it's not going to come out.
Definitely hot water helps a bit more with the release of the grease. But if you're pre-treating, if you know the greasy stain is there, you can... I like to use the Mechanics hand cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
Because that gets your grease off your hands without water.
Right.
So if you pre-treat a grease stain with that, put it into the cold water, it won't be an issue.
Perfect. Turn off lights, yeah. Computers, yeah. We can put our computers on screen save or a power save mode or hibernate mode. The problem with XP, though, if you put it in hibernate mode and it comes out, your mouse doesn't work.
I haven't had that problem.
Yeah, well, I have on three computers, so I don't hibernate it.
Or put them on a power bar when they're not in use. Shut them right off. Make sure that there's no power getting to them at all.
Yeah.
And that applies not just to computers, but a whole lot of household appliances that have anything with instant on is going to be using power when you think it's off.
Sure, because that little green light is on, you know.
But there's a whole lot of electronics behind it that's being powered, just exactly. waiting for you to hit a button, say, okay, turn on. So those loads can actually be pretty prodigious. Anything with a little clock in it, like a coffee maker that you think is off, but the clock's running,
yep.
is probably using something like anywhere from 3 to 10 watts.
And I've noticed an invisible energy sucker-upper is my toothbrush recharger.
Absolutely.
Things like that. Yeah. A transformer for low voltage, even though they're not on, it seems warm.
Because there's some power going into it the whole time, it's still attempting to charge the toothbrush.
You know, and then...
So, if you could, basically, for most of those units, something like, you know, an hour on charge a day is adequate. So, again, if you can put them all on a power bar, flip the power bar off.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, get rid of your second fridge. I don't know why people would have two fridges, but some do, I guess.
Well, I can tell you that we used to maintain a second fridge, and that was specifically for use around Christmas time when we did a lot of the Christmas baking and stuff in preparation for the holiday season. So it was typically on about 2 weeks a year.
Great. We just got to take a quick station break. You're listening to CKSU FM 93.1 in stereo. I'm Tick with No K, and I'm in the studio with Daryl McMahon, who is from Econogics, a small consulting company. We'll be back in just a moment. 8:23 here on the Hump Day version of Special Blend. This is the 18th of July. I'm Tick with No K. I'm in the studio with Daryl McMahon. He runs a company called Econogics Incorporated. You can check out his website, www.econogics. It's like economics with a G instead of an M, .com. And there's just tons of information there, including safe surfing, but that's another story another time because data and protection of data, oh, geez, I've been through it, losing data, and oh, boy. But let's talk about gas because that's what everyone's all worked up about. And personally, I won't be happy until gas reaches $4 or $5 a liter. We wake up one morning and then people freak out. I drive a very economical car. I do about 150 kilometers a day. I do my best, and yet I'm being blasted by giant pickup trucks, SUV. Everyone's passing me. Everyone. I'm doing 120, and everyone's still passing me in their giant pickup trucks, and I don't get it. Like, they bitch about the gas, but it doesn't seem to bother these people. I don't know.
Like the weather, right? I mean, we're all going to complain about it, but we're not doing anything about it.
That's right. They don't understand it either. They don't try to... people bitch about the weather because I don't think they understand how it works. But saving on gasoline usage, I try that. And you mentioned many times on your site, saving on gasoline usage, that, of course, we get 0 miles per gallon if we're stopped.
Correct.
Idling. And that leads to my revelation on your site was plan your trips to avoid left turns.
Right.
And boy, I am going to start thinking about that. There's one intersection in particular. I'm heading east on Innes. I want to go to Home Depot, but I want to get an ice cap on the south side. And I go to Home Depot first, which is left. And it's like, no, I should go get my ice cap first, which is on the right. Shoot over to Home Depot, and then I'd be making all right turns instead of all
right
left
turns, right.
Which would be e-maker. So the revelation is making left turns.
Making left turns, because you end up stopped in traffic. You're looking for that spot. You're waiting. Then usually what happens is you wait, and you do the panic accelerate on the amber light, hoping that guy's not getting ready to run the red. So it's a little bit of a stress thing going there. Plus, you know, you're going to do that hard acceleration for a short distance, which is, you know, bad for your fuel economy. And you're in a high-risk position now because this is where the majority of accidents actually take place.
It was a great revelation. Plan your trips avoiding left turns, which leads to traffic management. The humans using the gas.
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't the city do something about having a stop at every intersection?
I would really like to see the Ottawa's passion for four-way stops to go away. You know, we have a whole bunch of intersections here where we know that there's a major thoroughfare and there's a lesser thoroughfare, and the main traffic should be allowed to go forward. What we're using stop signs for is traffic calming and speed control, not for actual traffic control. So if we were actually enforcing laws and actually had a mentality in our population that, you know, we should be driving with safety in mind and with respect for our traffic laws, then we shouldn't need that many stops. And that would really improve our fuel economy overall in the city.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it would be a tremendous amount, that one gesture, if we just eliminated, I don't know, 100 stop signs a year. I don't know how many there are in the city, but it would be a tremendous...
Must be thousands.
Yeah, it must be a tremendous... Also, drive with minimum lighting. I wasn't sure by what you meant by that. And my only side complaint to the statement would be, well, they forced us into daytime running lights.
Right.
For safety, and that's using power.
It is using power. So, but what I'm talking about is there's a lot of novelty lighting and cosmetic lighting being put on vehicles now. Lots of extra marker lights as, I guess, personal statements to decorating the vehicle. But the reality of all that stuff is that the electricity is coming from the battery. The battery is being charged by the alternator. The alternator is getting its energy from gasoline usage. So every little bit of extra lighting on your vehicle is adding to your gas bill.
Yeah. But they don't care. They'd rather have the gadgets.
Then that's the personal decision, and stop complaining about gasoline prices.
Good for you. What about gas outs? The gas outs, I think, is when you're referring to when people protest. The new RO has a gas bulletin segment on their show, I think, telling us where our highs and low of the gas prices are. I think when you say gas outs, we're talking about when we protest.
That's right. When basically what we've had is a number of primarily internet campaigns where people have been said on this specific day, don't buy any gasoline. And, we'll send a message to the oil companies. Well, the oil companies are not listening to that message. All they care about is, over a period of a week or a month or a year, how much fuel are they selling? And if they're selling exactly the same amount, they really don't care whether you bought it on the 18th or the 19th.
Yeah, it makes no difference. I laugh at people. And I believe in your personal philosophy, and I'll just say on my own behalf, is that I boycott Imperial Oil. All Exxon products, for their abysmal environmental record. Of course, the Exxon Valdez is a classic example. But in general, it's the biggest company in the universe, and it scares me, and I don't like them, and I don't care about putting a tiger in my tank, so right. I don't. So enough on gas, because it's going to continue, right? Is gas going to go up?
Of course it is.
Or are we going to find an alternative source?
Gas is going to continue going up until we do find an alternative source. The pressures on oil right now are, one, we're not really finding very much. So we've got a whole issue around something called Hubbert's Peak and peak oil, which I won't go into at this point because we could cover an hour just on
that. And I've talked about it. People don't believe in it.
Right. Well, that's the reality.
But the numbers are there.
The numbers are there.
It's really there.
It's happened with every oil field, and we're just not discovering it at the rate that we're using it. Something's got to give. However, we do have, the swing producers. Oh, the other issue in North America, of course, is we haven't actually built a new refinery here in about 30 years anywhere in North America. So we're actually now into crunches when specific refineries have problems, like the one that caught fire in Texas last summer, I think it was. So those kinds of things are real. Then we have a whole bunch of media hype things about, the hurricanes coming into the Gulf and therefore gasoline prices go up, where there should be at least a 3-month lag, because it takes at least that long from the time that we pump oil on the Gulf Coast until it turns into gasoline at your local service station. So there are some real things, there are some cosmetic things, but the reality is we're not making any more.
And that's what I tried telling the guy at the gas station, but he was a young punk, and he just didn't believe me. I said, listen, just do some research instead of playing Pac-Man, just type in peak oil and just do a bit of reading. So I'm with you there. Which gets into natural gas. I know a lot of people that jumped on the natural gas bandwagon, and they're just hurting big time now. I still burn oil. Yeah, I'm bad. I'm sorry, but we don't have any pipelines in my area, and propane is not my answer.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm burning oil. I try to, again, burn as less as... I try to get through a winter with one tank. I try. It's hard, but I try.
But efficiency is more important than the actual fuel that you're using.
Natural gas?
Natural gas, we've got some issues coming. Basically, again, we're in North America. We're going to get to the point where we're going to hit peak natural gas. My belief is we've already hit it. Analysts say that we haven't, but the reality is that we're not finding as much, and we're continuing to increase consumption. We're using more natural gas. It's still the preferred heating source for new construction of homes in North America, because it's still the cheapest, and it's now the preferred electrical generating fuel for peak production during the day. So, and a little later, we're going to talk about the fact that that's really where most of the hydrogen that we're producing today comes from as well. So we've got a whole bunch of pressure points coming on the supply, and the supply is just not going to be there.
Okay, enough on gas. Is propane a derivative of natural gas?
No, actually, propane is a derivative of the oil refinery process.
Okay, so but like I'm scared with these giant ships, LPG, liquid propane,
pain gas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like giant
or liquid
ships,
petroleum
like,
gas.
Aren't they just atomic bombs waiting for some terrorist to fly a missile into?
Well, that's certainly what the U.S. Department of Defense believes. That's why they won't actually allow LNG or LPG terminals to be built on U.S. soil now.
Oh, really?
Really.
Oh, well, I'm not surprised, because when I saw them building those things, it's like, that's just a floating atomic bomb.
Yeah, so they're going to all be built in Canada and Mexico so that the U.S. can have the benefit but not the risk.
Of course. Oh, boy. Boy, that's not happy. I have some horrible thoughts just thinking about that. Let's just take a small break. Not sure exactly what, but just take a small break, and then we'll come back and talk about hydrogen, because that's a big issue. That's a giant issue. So we'll talk that in just 2 seconds. 8:36, you're listening to the Hump Day version of Special Blend. I'm Tick with No K. I'm in the studio with Daryl McMahon, who runs Econogics, Econogics, the small consulting company that helps North American businesses improve their bottom line using practices and technologies which are environmentally beneficial. Check out his webpage. There's all sorts of really interesting information and a ton of links to prove your point, to prove the obvious point. Let's move on now to hydrogen. Hydrogen is being touted as the miracle fuel. And I've seen the footage, and whenever they talk about hydrogen, we see a tailpipe with water coming out of it, and that's it. They think that's our solution. We're just going to fill our tanks with hydrogen.
That's certainly the story that we're getting in the mainstream media and that the hydrogen industry is promoting. Unfortunately, that's about the end of the good news. But the way I put it is that hydrogen is the water is the ash of hydrogen. When you've combusted hydrogen, you get water, and that's you know, nice and benign, and that's the good news story, and everybody's happy. What we haven't really looked at in a big way is where the hydrogen comes from. Today, hydrogen primarily comes from the steam reforming of natural gas. So we're going to put one more pressure on the fossil fuels that we don't have enough of now, and that are going to be a real supply issue in the future.
Explain that concept, steam reforming.
So steam reforming is basically setting up a giant chemistry set and thermal reactor. And what we do is we take the natural gas, which is primarily methane, CH4, and we basically decompose the molecules with heat and pressure so that we can get the carbon at one side and the hydrogen at the other. What we do with the carbon is generally we just sort of try to release it into the atmosphere, where it hooks up with some oxygen and becomes CO2. Oh, right, greenhouse gas. Well, you know, we're not going to worry about that too much. But we get a whole bunch of hydrogen out the other end, which is the good thing. That's what we want to have. So then we're going to be able to use that. What we don't talk about, though, is, you know, we're using the natural gas as the feedstock, but we're also using natural gas generally as the thing that we're burning to make the heat for the thermal part of the process. So at best, it's about 70% efficient. So you start with this natural gas that we could use for something else. 70% of that energy now becomes available as hydrogen. Then we actually have to find a way to store it, distribute it, transport it. By the time we're done that, if we're really lucky, we probably still have 60% of the energy left by the time we actually get it somewhere. Then we're going to go put it presumably in our vehicle, which is either going to run on hydrogen combustion or hydrogen fuel cell. Right now, probably hydrogen combustion. In which case, we're looking at about 11% efficiency in the engine. So that 60% suddenly just dropped to about 6% efficiency. And that's assuming that our vehicle is actually really efficient in terms of what it's doing. So by the end of it, you know, my numbers say that we're probably somewhere around 3% efficiency in that energy cycle.
Crazy. There's some other interesting things about hydrogen, and one of them is it's highly reactive to air.
It's highly reactive to just about everything.
Really?
Yeah. We have an issue in terms of putting it in steel pipelines because it actually does react with steel and brittles the steel. So we need a new infrastructure for distribution. So it's not going to be a matter of just taking the natural gas pipelines and sticking hydrogen in them. It's also the smallest molecule that exists. So things that we consider to be airtight and watertight are like big giant holes to hydrogen, so it leaks out very easily.
I was going to ask you that. I'm going off in all sorts of directions. A hydrogen atom, so where does it appear on the periodic table?
It's number one.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. And it's the smallest one?
The smallest one.
Where does it exist naturally? Does it exist naturally?
It does not exist in free state naturally on the planet Earth.
So what's it in?
It's always combined with something because it's always reacted with something. So it's in water, H2O.
Right.
Right. It's in ammonia.
Okay, let's stick to water for a second. Mm-hmm. Couldn't we develop a very small filter that we'd pour water in and it would just hydrogen would come out? I know that sounds so silly.
At a mechanical, physical level, I don't think that technology exists. We have a number of sort of chemical and electrical technologies that essentially do that. Electrolysis is the most common.
Is that more efficient than the steam reforming?
It's not.
It's not.
No. Electrolysis is in...
That's high amount of electricity being used.
High amount of electricity being used. The efficiency on that in commercial units that do the work today is roughly 60% from the conversion of the energy that you started with, the electricity. The hydrogen you get out the other end, 60% of that energy still remains in that hydrogen. Then again, you get all those downstream losses from converting the hydrogen back to whatever in order to get the energy out of it.
It sounds like a nightmare. And another part that I was reading very carefully, or pretty carefully, we've all seen the Daily Planet or Discovery Channel hydrogen specials, and I've seen them make the tanks and subject it to, you know, dropping it and throwing, firing guns at it and doing all sorts of tests to show that, you know, it won't explode. But there was a guy that did a study on the storage of hydrogen, and I loved the part, and even you noted, that you could actually get an explosion from the static discharge from a leak in a tank itself because of the high pressure.
That's right.
Like the high pressure of the hydrogen coming through a pinhole would form a static charge that would make it explode.
That's correct.
Wow. It doesn't seem, I mean, I guess people really need to, can we do anything to stop this? Is this just going to go ahead? The Bush administration says it's number one, we're going ahead. And I've seen tanks in Denmark, I think, or filling stations somewhere in Europe.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything we can stop the PR level of going forward that's happening right now. But when people, you know, ever do get to see a vehicle, if it gets that far and it shows up in the showroom for $500,000, I think the sticker shock is going to bring it to a halt. But I think you'll find that, you know, if you do the research, and I did, that's why I have the book, The Emperor's New Hydrogen Economy. We've been at this for, 50 years in terms of R&D, and the people who are in the know in the U.S. and Canada who, you know, are actually following the research are saying we're probably another 30 years away from any of this becoming really mainstream. It's not like it's new, and it's not like we've made a lot of progress. So the idea of this becoming, you know, a mainstream solution is very unlikely.
It's not going to happen. And it's not new technology either. Like,
there's nothing new about it.
I've got a real problem with internal combustion engines. Like I say, we have a motor the size of my hand that can push a space shuttle around in space, but we're still using internal combustion engines, which you refer to as ICE.
Yes.
Hydrogen is not new. It was developed earlier than gasoline, or
The hydrogen fuel cell predates the internal combustion engine and the rechargeable battery.
Wow, crazy. I read something. I don't know if you get Monitor magazine.
It's
kind of
rule,
unfair
no.
dropping it on you, but they say fill her up with aluminum. Pellets made of aluminum and gallium can produce pure hydrogen when water is poured on them.
Yes, there's any number of chemicals. It's the most common. How do I put this? It's the most common element in the universe.
Hydrogen. Because it's everywhere.
Right. So there's any number of ways that you can produce it. Electrolysis happens to be the most common in terms of chemical processes, electrical processes today. But like I said, we have steam reforming of the natural gas stock. But yes, there's all kinds of metals that have alloys that have hydrogen as a component, and there's literally hundreds of ways of producing hydrogen.
This scheme sounds a bit crazy. He said the hydrogen would not have to be stored or transported, taking care of the two stumbling blocks to generating hydrogen. They think you can just bring aluminum and gallium together and then mix it up when you're ready to go.
Right, but they don't talk about the energy required to refine gallium or to produce the aluminum, which, you know, are fairly energy intense.
Which,
you know,
everybody forgets about, eh?
Right.
It's like, take these two things that exist, yeah, but you're not taking into consideration how those two things exist.
Yeah, I like the idea of aluminum as an energy store, or actually there are a couple of other metals as well, but we can use them in things like fuel cells, metal fuel cells, or in primary and rechargeable batteries, where we'd have a lot better energy equation going for them than the idea of using them as a hydrogen store and going to the hydrogen mechanism.
So hydrogen, in your mind, is out. It's not going to happen. It's ridiculous.
Not for mainstream.
When you do the research,
the technology is there. It's been around for a long time. It works. What we're doing right now is basically some refinements to try to make it a little more palatable. But we're not making quantum leaps, and we're not making breakthroughs. Reality is that economically, it's not going to be palatable.
Is an alternative diesel?
Well,
how about biodiesel?
Biodiesel?
Are you a fan of biodiesel? Where I can go to my favorite junk food restaurant, get their used oil, pour it in my tank.
I'm a big fan of doing biodiesel that way.
Yeah.
The idea of doing it on a local scale, taking something that's currently a waste product, reusing it, and then getting an energy use out of it after its original use. The idea of having that as an integrated cycle where we're starting from local production, let's say canola, making the canola oil locally on a local farm, and then selling that to the local restaurant. I've heard that there's one co-op actually near Waterloo where they're actually going to rent the oil to the restaurant and then take it back when it's been used, and then do the biodiesel refinery on the farm, and then run the farm equipment on the biodiesel made from the used cooking oil. Mm. What scares me is that we're going to see what I call big biodiesel come in, and they're basically going to take the big oil paradigm and just try to use biodiesel as a new product line in the same old paradigm. I think that'll have problems.
Well, not if we go buy our own biodiesel engines and work up a deal with our local McDonald's or Burger King or something.
But that takes us into sort of local economy and that sort of thing, and that would be a great way to go. But
I'm very disappointed with ethanol. I was fooled, I have to admit. Years ago, Sunoco and McEwen, maybe Sunoco was first, but I think McEwen takes the title of being the first to distribute ethanol. And I've been using ethanol, I know I have, for at least 15 years,
right.
So perhaps 20.
So the 5 to 10% ethanol blend in gasoline.
And that's the first part of the shock that I found out that I thought I was using a pure ethanol, but it only had 3% at the time, and now they're a little better. We're up to 5.
Right.
But it's still only a small percentage. And the downside of that is I moved to the country, and I realized what a corn plant really looks like up close.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you drive by them on the highways, and they're just fields of corn, and you think there's like 20 cobs of corn on each plant.
Right.
Wrong. I went to one. They're 8 feet tall. They got roots that look like science fiction creatures holding on to that ground, and you're lucky if you get 3 cobs of corn. Usually 1, sometimes 2, never 3.
Mm-hmm.
A tremendous amount of energy goes into the planting, the harvesting, the tilling, the whole shebang.
Absolutely.
To make popcorn and maybe some oils,
animal feed,
and ethanol. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not for me. It's not working anymore. I mean, I
agree. I mean, the ethanol lobby in the U.S. that really kicked this thing off was more about subsidies for the agriculture industry in the U.S. than it was about producing a renewable fuel. I'm still a proponent of the idea of using roughly 5% ethanol in our fuels as an oxygenator, because that's better than some of the other things like MTBE and MMT that we would otherwise have in our gasoline, given that we're still using it. So, but the idea of going to E85 and E100, I think that's a real problem. I don't think that's a place we should be going. And corn isn't the feedstock. If we want to get serious about ethanol, we need to look at things like switchgrass and other stocks.
Well, and of course, there's not enough land on the planet to go to replace gasoline with ethanol.
Not if we're going to try and maintain the current lifestyles, no.
But it does make sense to use a percentage.
Absolutely.
As an oxygenator.
That's correct.
Which leads me to the question, is there a difference in gas quality amongst the name brand gas stations?
Very little, actually.
Gas is gas.
Gas is pretty much gas. We're at the point now where in most North America, the gasoline actually comes to most city centers in one giant pipeline, which is then fed off to the storage tanks for the major retailers. So they're all taking it off the same pipeline. And then they each put in a certain amount of additive of their own, which is their own special recipe. This is, you know, how you get sort of the 87, 89, 91, 93 octanes. But the other thing is that, unbeknownst to us, the oil companies are actually quite happy to exchange between themselves in the event that one of them has a shortage. So just because you think it's coming from Petro-Canada doesn't necessarily mean it is.
I've always said there's just one big tank and they all pump into each other somehow.
There's one big pipeline.
Yeah, exactly. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Hump Day. We're back. It's the Hump Day version of Special Blend. I'm in the studio with Daryl McMahon. You can check out his website, www.econogics.com, and you'll get the truth behind some of the myths. That's the best way I can say it. And if you don't believe him, he's got the proof right there. All sorts of links from all sorts of people with PhDs and stuff like that. Let's start with electric car. I met you at the Chrysler Dam Fest, and you had a General Electric lawnmower, which I just thought was so neat. Talked a bit, and we found out General Electric says it was never made.
Now, basically, General Electric has kind of denied all knowledge of these units that they were produced by them in the 1970s. And now we have kind of a little subculture across North America that are finding these things in fields and dragging them out and restoring them and putting them back into service.
Well, I know now that you're a big fan of electric cars. You have you own electric cars, and you're an electric car club enthusiast, mm-hmm. and you know all there is to know pretty much, or you have the connections.
A lot of knowledge.
About electric cars. Now, here's what bugs me. Again, we spoke off studio. For the last 40, 30, 20 years, I'm still waiting for my electric car. I've seen them. Mm-hmm. They've told me, they meaning the big three, the big whatever.
Right.
I mean, this is getting insane. I've been told year after year, you're getting an electric car. They're going to be here. Popular Mechanics, front cover every year, I guess. The electric car of the future. It's 2007,
mm-hmm.
and they're not there. And doing some research, boy, and I think I saw a show. In fact, just shortly before or after I met you, I saw this show on, who was it that had 50 cars in California? I think it's mentioned on your website.
50 cars in California.
I think, it doesn't matter.
Could be the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power.
No, there's these cars they sold to people and then they took them back.
Oh, certainly more than 50. It was General Motors and the EV1.
EV1, that's it. I saw the show on the EV1 just after we talked. Mm-hmm. It was on TV. It was amazing watching people cry as they got their...
It was astounding.
So it was a great car, right?
It was an excellent car.
What is their problem?
The problem is that it doesn't make money for the automakers.
Why?
Well, it doesn't require the two things where the auto companies actually still make money. Well, there are three places where the auto companies make money right now. One is in financing. That one wouldn't have changed. the next one is in dealer maintenance. And the problem with the electric car, from the point of view of a dealer, is it just doesn't need very much maintenance. It doesn't need an oil change. It doesn't need the rad fixed. It doesn't need points or distributors or, you know, fuel computers or all that stuff. It doesn't need an exhaust system. It doesn't need all the things that really you keep taking your car back in to get serviced. So that revenue stream disappears largely with the electric car. The other thing is if you take a look at the North American automakers today, they're basically just assemblers of parts from other people, with the exception of engines. Mm. They still make their own engines.
Right.
They still have their own engine plants. But that engine is not part of the electric car. So that little profit center disappears with the electric car as well. So these guys have got a pretty good deal going still, and they're not in any hurry to throw it away.
Well, and this is where, if I was in charge, and people have heard me before, it's very simple. If I'm in charge, GM, Ford, whatever, you will make your electric cars.
Right.
Period.
Like, and clearly and they can do it, like, because California said that in the 1990s, and out came 7 amazing electric vehicles that were produced in small quantities, went onto the roads in California, and the people did absolutely love them. And that, I think, is a problem for the automakers. I think that's the reason why these vehicles aren't just not for sale. They were literally ripped out of the hands of the people who had them, taken away and crushed. And basically, you know, it's like 1984. We're trying to take every vestige of information about those vehicles and remove it from the historical record.
I was so excited when California imposed those strict laws and told us you got to get everything that burns fuel off the road by a certain day. Schwarzenegger ruined all that, right, recently?
Yeah, there's a lot of backtracking. Yeah. Schwarzenegger is very much on the hydrogen bandwagon, so... Yeah.
Okay, well, he's the Terminator. He will destroy the planet somehow, I'm sure. You have an electric car?
I do have an electric
car. It's nothing new. It's probably nothing fancy. Did you make it?
No, this one, well, I designed the conversion, but I had a lot of... I contracted out a lot of the work, so I would have been the general contractor, I guess, on this conversion, but...
We won't get into the details of how to make one because it's all on your website, econogics.com. But I think the benefits are fairly obvious. But the things that stick out with people, and these are quotes, electric cars don't reduce pollution, they just move it.
Yeah, again, misnomer. What it comes down to is where is the electricity produced and how. So if we can clean up the source of the electricity, then we're dealing with it at that point. But the reality is, even if it's the worst coal plant that's producing the electricity, we're still better off using that one smokestack that we need to clean up. Better efficiency at a roughly 30-35% in terms of producing electricity, getting electricity through the transmission line, charging the batteries, running the vehicle, because the electric drivetrain is hyper-efficient compared to any internal combustion engine. At the end of the day, we're using less energy, producing less pollution to drive that electric car down the road to use something that's running on gasoline or diesel.
Electric cars are slow.
They can be. I mean, electric cars do what they're designed to do. And originally, the market niche that they targeted was one where high performance wasn't something that people were looking for. But today, we have electric dragsters that are in the top fueler class. We have high-performance electric sports cars. My own current electric vehicle project is a 1973 Porsche 914 that's been converted to electric. And, yeah, it's fairly impressive off the line.
And, again, I've seen the Daily Planet Discovery channels, and they show the electric cars from 0 to 60 in just fractions of a second. It was like they press the gas. There's like a G-force. The guy's being bent back, and it's quiet.
Yeah.
There's nothing coming out of no tailpipe.
Yeah. Vehicles like the Tesla and AC propulsion have targeted specifically that niche to try to get past that myth so that people who have no need of that performance still think it's a barrier to acquiring the vehicle because someday they might need it.
And electric vehicles look funny.
Electric vehicles look like whatever you want them to look like.
Exactly.
So some of the original small production vehicles were, you know, the little, we call them the cheese wedge design. But the guy had a specific goal in mind, and that was he wanted to be able to produce a vehicle that was cheap and affordable. And he wanted it to be distinctive, so it was funny-looking because he wanted it to be funny-looking.
Exactly. Electric vehicles aren't for everybody. If you go to your website, you'll find that out. It's probably not for me because the electric vehicle falls short of my range requirements. That's all.
Right.
If I'm doing 150 kilometers, I'm kind of pushing the envelope. Although if I could charge, like you say, at work, 60 kilometers one way and charge and come back, I'd be okay.
You'd be okay. And that's with current lead acid technology.
Right.
The battery technologies are improving, but right now they're not particularly affordable for those of us with average wallets. But hybrids are definitely an option for people in that position.
I was going to talk about hybrids. Are hybrids, well, again, anything that cuts ICE, internal combustion engine emissions, I guess, is a good thing. And a hybrid still has a gas engine, but it has an electric motor that kicks in when? On slow?
It depends on the particular vehicle and what it was designed for. So if we're looking at the Toyotas Prius and Hondas of today, basically the electric motor provides a lot of the acceleration capability, which is something that it excels at. And then the gasoline engine can be smaller because it's providing sort of just the cruising capability. So it'll be more efficient that way. The next generation is what's called the plug-in hybrid, where what we're going to do is be able to drive 20, 30, 40 kilometers on pure electric mode, and then the gasoline engine or diesel engine will kick in after that.
The real answer is the big automakers just stop your engines and start making electric cars. The
Absolutely.
EV1, do you remember the name of that documentary, or would you have
probably known? He'll Kill the Electric Car.
That's it. Who Killed the Electric Car? Catch that documentary. It's about the GM EV1. A sad story on a hugely successful product. I mean, they could have given, I don't know, yeah, they wouldn't have made money off of repairs, but they would have saved the world. They could have been responsible for saving this planet just with that car alone.
An amazing shift in the paradigm.
They would last much longer. You could build them, what, out of plastic, essentially, for Canadian salt issues. Mm-hmm. They would last longer.
Right. Well, basically, you could use the Saturn polymer technology for bodies.
Now, can I go out and just buy a golf cart and put in, I don't know, an elevator motor in it? Like, what's involved? What's the matching? Is it... I guess it's all three. We need something to store the energy, batteries.
Right. We need the batteries.
Weight.
Yes.
And then we need motor, weight,
mm-hmm.
but motor, horsepower, load on batteries. Is there a little computer that controls all that?
Not so much a computer.
Is there a basic formula?
There are some basic formulas. And there are rules of thumb in terms of doing conversions. But, you know, we've got some really good engineering minds who are also working on this stuff. So, I mean, definitely better vehicles are going to be coming. In terms of doing, you know, the golf cart, well, you know, it's what do you want to accomplish? We can buy a used electric golf cart today.
And it'd be fine.
And, you know, it meets a lot of needs. There's a whole class of vehicle actually called the neighborhood electric vehicle. In Canada, we call it the low-speed vehicle. Unfortunately, only legal in British Columbia at the moment. But we actually have two world leader companies producing them, and Bargé used to produce them, and they were great for urban driving missions.
Not anymore. And I'm very discouraged to find out that the province of Ontario doesn't offer any kind of incentives, right, for electric stuff, electric vehicles?
The only incentive they have is a rebate on the sales tax.
Oh, yippee. Well, I think we need an electric car. Are you going to stick around in a few minutes after 9?
Absolutely.
Okay. I'm with Daryl McMahon. Check out his website, www.econogics.com, and you'll find all sorts of useful tips for saving energy, and you can find out a bit more about this hydrogen myth that's hitting the planet right now. And I don't know about you, but I want to build an electric car or maybe hype up my lawnmower. I have an old lawnmower, just to experiment, just to drive like 8 kilometers to my store, 4 kilometers one way, 4 kilometers back. We'll talk about that after the BBC News, coming up in just a moment. 14 minutes to something. Daryl McMahon, you gave me this thing, and the people that have our enhanced video feed could check it out. We don't really have one, but I'll try to describe it. It's kind of like, it could be an L-shaped. It's about a quarter-inch tube, L-shaped, with a little square box on it. It's like just 2 inches tall, quarter-inch hose, and a little tiny clip. Now, I think that this little clip, and again, maybe I'll can I have this?
Certainly.
Because I'll scan it and put it on MySpace and people can understand. So if you want to see what I'm talking about today, I'll scan this little thing and put it on MySpace and show you what it is. It's got a little clip for attaching to something, right?
It does.
It's okay. Do you want some water?
Yeah, I'm going to run and get some water.
Okay, you get some water. I'll keep describing this thing here. Like I said, it's a little L-shaped thing, and I think you can put a hose on it, and then there's a box, and there's an outlet. I'm guessing, because he kind of gave me a clue, that it's an aerator of sorts, but we'll find out what it attaches to and exactly how it works, because I don't really see anything here other, yeah, I don't know. I guess that's where the air comes through. So I took a guess, and it's an aerator.
It's not.
It's not an aerator?
It's a water saver.
A water saver.
This goes in the tank of your toilet.
Goes on the tank?
It does.
In or on?
Inside the tank.
Okay.
And it goes in the hose that runs from the supply tower to the fill tube for the bowl.
Right.
What it does is it splits the water feed so that some comes back into the tank and not all into the bowl. And what this actually does is saves about 3 liters per flush.
I see.
We're actually on the fill.
Get it out. Okay. Just mm-hmm. cough it right out there. This is the good thing about Campus Community Radio. We can cough and do anything we want here. Okay, so the clip goes on the little tube.
On the little tube that goes into the bowl.
The standpipe is what I call it, I guess, and that's from your little tube that supplies that.
That's correct.
So the rest of the water would be coming out
there.
Comes out
that rectangular opening.
Oh, very interesting.
So as we're worrying in Ottawa this summer about the amount of water that we're using and whether or not there will be shortages, then here's the solution. You know, this we're retailing this in the Ottawa market starting in August, and very cost-effective way to save on your water bill.
Please don't tell me it's $8.95.
$6.
Okay, because it costs about 5 cents to make in China. I know I'm exaggerating. R&D, you know, and things like that. Interesting. What I do is I just take the nozzle out of the standpipe completely and just have it fill into my bowl. I'm not quite sure. I'm not quite sure what the purpose of that thing is, that hose going into the standpipe.
What it does is it actually puts water into the bowl so the bowl refills after the flush.
But my bowl refills by gravity. Like, I guess it leaks or something.
That must leak, yeah.
Okay. Hmm. Interesting. Okay, and what's the estimated savings, do you think?
About 3 liters per flush fill cycle.
3 liters per flush fill cycle. Interesting. I'll scan this little thing and put it on my website, and I'll explain what everything is about, and you're getting some free marketing, I guess. We just got a few more minutes. I just want to talk about your electric car. You like it?
Love it.
It's fabulous, right?
Anyone who gets into an electric car ends up with what we call the EV grin. It's just remarkable. The idea that, you know, it's virtually silent. There's that just solid, robust power feel. Acceleration is usually quite phenomenal. The electric motor provides a lot of thrust.
Now, there are some commercial manufacturers. They're making them, but they're $100,000 each. Can I build one, like, honestly? Like, assuming that I start with I got to start with a good gas car first.
Right.
Like, I don't want a rust bucket.
Correct.
I read that on your site. Makes sense. But could I do it for under 10 grand, for example? All I need is a motor and batteries and a controller.
That's right.
Right?
So,
or is there something
$10,000 is about pretty close to the mark. So, yeah. But you're usually looking at about $8,000 in, you know, first line components, new quantity one retail.
Sure.
And probably close to $2,000 usually in, you know, services that you'll subcontract for machinists or whatever.
How do brakes work?
Same way.
Fluid being compressed?
Yeah, they still use hydraulic brakes. That doesn't change.
Okay.
If you have a power assist system, we need to add an electric vacuum pump in order to provide the vacuum assist for the power brakes.
And you need a bit of engineering, because you just can't guess at the number of batteries. You have to have a minimum, maximum?
There are some rules of thumb, and what it comes down to is, you know, you design for how far do you want to be able to go and what kind of acceleration performance you want. That determines what motor you're going to use so that you have the power and the efficiency, and then the range tells you how many batteries you're going to have to put on board so you have the capacity.
Right. Well, we're running out of time. Maybe I can have you back and you can give free rides to all our listeners in the parking lot with your electric car. I'd like to see it one day, and I'm going to do a bit more research, and maybe I'll have you back on when I have a problem, because I'm pretty sure I'm going to buy a golf cart just so I can have that feeling, entry level.
Absolutely. I recommend people who want to get into electric vehicles start with something entry level, a golf cart, an electrothon vehicle, trolling motors, an electric boat, something where it isn't quite the same risk as putting, you know, $10,000 or $30,000
I have an old lawnmower. It's shot, but it's a great frame, you know, riding lawnmower. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking putting on some wheels and just small, a small motor, small storage.
As long as it doesn't have a hydrostatic transmission, go for it.
Oh, is that a problem?
Hydrostatic transmissions are really big power pigs.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I have a hydrostatic on my gas mower.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
No, they convert an awful lot of power to heat.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thanks for joining me this morning. I hope to have you on again. It was a pleasure.
It's been fun. I'd like to come back.
Great. Daryl McMahon from Econogics, and it's like economics with a G. And check it out, www.econogics.com. Small consulting company, and you can get all the information you want there about electric stuff and all the myths and some of the facts about hydrogen and just energy in general. So I hope you enjoyed the show. Stick around. Let X equal X is going to be coming up in just a few minutes. Until then, I hope you have a good week, a good day, and stay tuned for all sorts of fine programming here on CKCUFM. Bye for now. Have a good day. See you later.